We'll commence with the July 22nd, 2011 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, with another rain report, available as a podcast weekly from therainreport.com. The name Ed Hare is not a household name in amateur radio circles, nor is his call W1RFI. Ed is a driving force behind the ARRL lab in Newington, Connecticut. Here's the first of two excerpts from his talk he gave during the 2011 Dayton Hamvention this past May.
For those who may not know me, I'm Ed Hare, W1RFI. I work in the ARRL laboratory and have a lot of fun. And I'm here with a presentation that's a little bit non-technical for me, because I thought I'd talk a little bit more about some of the things that we do in the laboratory. And even more fun than that, we're going to tell you a few tales that you're not going to read in the pages of QST. The presentation is on gravity gradient modulation, matrices of non-orthogonal, Now, you see, I went down to the pack rats. That's a big VHF group, very high-tech group, and I threw this slide on the screen, and they said, "Oh, great, Ed, we want that more than the presentation you were going to do." So... at any rate, now I'm here to talk to you about working in the ARRL lab. I've been there at headquarters now 25 years. Over those 25 years, I managed not to get my sorry butt fired for any reason. Let's just say I'm not famous for diplomacy and tact when it comes to the upper management of ARRL. I'm still there. It's good. And I'm going to tell you some about the lab and a few tales. Now, I promise you that absolutely everything I tell you is going to be the truth. In 25 years, I have enough interesting stories, I don't have to make anything up. Now, those of you who have never seen me speak before, I do have some rules in my presentation. First, this one's relatively new, so bear with me. It's okay to get up and leave. Now, this probably applies later in the weekend, but if someone suddenly remembers where they saw that all-mode HF transceiver under a table in perfect working condition for $5, I'll understand if they sprint out of the room. Go ahead, ask questions anytime you want. If I know the answer, I'll tell you. And if I don't know the answer, I'm going to make up something I'm pretty sure you're going to believe. Now, everybody has to laugh at my jokes. There was that unfortunate incident the last time I was here, so I have a new rule. I'm the only one allowed to tell any jokes. Now, falling asleep, especially Bob, with you, we might be better off. It's okay. Do me a favor, though, if you do decide to fall asleep. It's early in the morning. You all want coffee, I'm sure. But if I'm doing a good job up here, fall asleep with your head tipped forward. If I'm doing a bad job, fall asleep with your head tipped back. And if you've got a question, tip your head to either side. This way here, I don't have to stand up here wondering how I'm doing. I'm just going to look around the room. Now, I'm going to show you some of the ARRL laboratory. How many of you guys have been to the ARRL lab? Okay, you can leave now. We don't need you here. It's all right. This is the laboratory staff. We'll show you some of the guys here. This is the group photo. Whoa. Oh dear, someone snuck in a picture of the ARRL board of directors. No, that's a joke. These are meerkats. I actually love our board. You know, a lot of folks don't necessarily know it, but they're a group of unpaid volunteers. The ARRL board of directors does not get compensated. Kate Craigie, the president, doesn't get compensated. They're giving themselves to amateur radio, so I have a lot of respect and appreciation for that. Well, this would be me, Ed Hare, W1RFI. I'm also known as the Lab Dad. Yes, I will admit it's a vanity call. Whiskey 1, Romeo Foxtrot India, or really fine individual. When I post on QRZ.com and some of those others, it's real flaming idiot and a few variations on that. When the vanity program came out, I said, no, I don't need a vanity call. And we're talking in the lab one late night, and I said, you know, the only call I'd consider getting is W1RFI. And I stopped. I said, wait a minute, I'd really consider getting that. So I'm still on the edge, and then I realize, you know, someday I'm going to be an old fellow looking back at a lifetime. And at that point in my life, what would I regret more? Giving up KA1CV or not getting W1RFI when I had the chance. So the next day, I wrote the check. I think it was $30 at the time. And one request for one call. It was when the extra window had opened. Nobody wanted the 1x3. So I became W1RFI. Now, what was really interesting is immediately I became more famous. Because the call was more memorable, all of a sudden everybody knew who I was and could associate me with my work pretty easily. I've been a ham since 1963, was WN1 crazy young fellow. I was indeed in the wild days of my misspent youth. Now, those are some tales I'm not going to tell you. My personal interest in amateur radio is QRP. Our motto is less power to you. Now, of course, some come up and throw the inevitable in our faces. Life's too short for QRP, but we finally figured it out. Some guys have short ones. Others last a little longer, usually quiets them down pretty quickly. And my professional interest is in the area of RFI and EMC. Personally, I do things outside of amateur radio. I have some of my super secret fishing holes. No, I'm not going to tell you where they are, but if you could imagine being on a 40-acre lake in the state of Connecticut on public land, loaded with big bass and pickerel, and most days that I'm there, I'm the only one fishing the lake, that's a super secret fishing hole. Here's a picture of me in my hippie days. That was 1988, for the record, holding a modified HW8 I used to do work all states with 250 milliwatts.
You're listening to an excerpt from a talk given by Ed Hare, W1RFI, a driving force behind the ARRL lab. We'll return to his 2011 Dayton Hamvention presentation in a moment. This is The Rain Report, now on Twitter at twitter.com/TheRainReport. We'll be right back.
Now, a lot of you have heard of W1AW, but there's another station not as well known, W1HQ, and this is the operators club for the headquarters staff. We'll often get people in from out of town or live out of state, and they can't put up an effective station. They live in an apartment where antennas are forbidden. So we like having a nice station where we can allow these staffers to stay active and interested in amateur radio. For some reason, we think it's valuable if the headquarters staff actually get on the air from time to time. Although a lot of us, we talk to hams all day on the phone, we want to go home and play with our stamp collection. We have a VHF station and a nice HF station there. Off on one side, there is indeed an amplifier. I never use it. And the snake is Hamaconda. That's our mascot. And we had a contest to name the snake, and we had a couple names that we liked, so we awarded a couple of winners. Now, if you get into the lab, you'll see a glass display case that holds some of the projects we've worked on over the years. And sitting in that clay case is an interesting little device, the Tuna Tintu. Now, the QRPers, they come into the lab, they walk past us, and they start bowing, saying they are not worthy and all that. But this was designed in 1975 and 76 by Doug DeMaw, a W1FB, a QSD editor of quite some fame, called the Tuna Tintu. It was a 40-meter two-transistor transmitter. Maybe puts out about half a watt. Well, over the years, we wanted to put together that display case. In fact, when I came to headquarters, the boss said to me, Ed, I want you to build a display case for all of our stuff. Well, I never did. So 7 years later, when I was the boss, I told Mike Gruber, I want you to build a display case for all of our stuff. Well, several years later, he finally got tired. He went off and he bought some of those just shelving. You know, you can buy a little rail shelving. And he put it up and he said, Ed, now, where's the Tuna Tintu? I want to put that up and display in the case. Well, we went looking for the Tuna Tintu, and it was gone. I mean, we scoured the lab from one end to the other, and that precious piece of ARRL history was nowhere to be found. We were kind of sad, but we put the other stuff in the display case anyway. 3 years later, I went to Boxborough, Massachusetts to do the convention there. Sunday afternoon, as all the vendors were packing up, I took a walk through the flea market area, and I happened to glance under a table, and sitting on the top of a box was a Tuna Tintu. I bought the Tuna Tintu. How much you want for it? He says, give me a dollar. I gave him a dollar. I brought it back to headquarters. And I'm showing it to the guy. I say, hey, look, we got a Tuna. You know, he did a good job duplicating the original. He did a real, go get me the May 76 QST. So they brought, you know, we grabbed that out and I started comparing them. And I'm looking at every single resistor was the same. Every single capacitor was the same. The dymo labels were crooked exactly the same way. And it dawned on me that this was the original Tuna Tintu lost from the lab 3 years earlier, found 150 miles away by the only person that would recognize it. It's amazing, and after that, the QRPers started building their own Tuna Tintus. We have this on the air. I mean, it's probably now made about 1,000 contacts with different QRPers. They've all had an absolute ball with it. And so I just call it the incredible saga of the Tuna Tintu. Absolutely a true story. You know, for a while when I bought it, I thought it was mine. But then I got to thinking, I'm agonizing about what to do about this. And I says, well, wait a minute. Now, this was in the lab. I was the lab manager, and I never authorized it going away. What we think happened is that someone went into the parts cage looking for parts, saw the crystal socket in it, didn't realize what it was, and we'd normally let a guy go in and take a crystal socket. You know, If a ham there wants to build a project, we don't mind if he takes a couple bucks worth of parts. So we think someone took that, and then years later it ended up in a junk box somehow. Not that they were trying to steal it, because if they were trying to steal it, they would have known what it was and kept it. In fact, I had a guy email me a few weeks ago and says, "Ed, I was reading how you have the Tunitin 2. I've always loved that rig. Could I buy it from you for $500? And I had to explain that it really wasn't mine. When I agonized about it, I realized, no, this always belonged to the league. It was stolen property. So I did the only thing honor would require is I gave it back to ARL, and now it sits in a case of honor. So the ARL lab, we provide a wide range of technical services to the league in its operation. Most of you know product review testing. We also do advertisement acceptance every month as we look in the advertisements that go into QST for technical accuracy. We run the technical information service both on the web and in person. We'll support the field organization. We'll support other staff. In fact, other departments, two things, is they'll come in looking for technical assistance professionally, and they'll also come in looking for lab favors. Those of you here who've worked in staff understand that I usually hold that over your head for some period of time and then ultimately grant the lab favor. ARL's technical information service is really based a lot on our technology web pages. We try to put a lot of the good information and answers to common questions there. We have technical articles we get involved with either writing or helping with, and ARRL publications like the Handbook and others will often have strong laboratory involvement. And we can provide individual answers to questions as well, either email or call headquarters. In the technical information service, there's probably the number one question is, how do I find information about, well, go ahead and name the subject. Well, we worked hard on this in the lab, and what we ultimately developed is an internal secret tool that lets us usually quickly answer that question for members. If you look on the screen, you'll see the secret tool. It's called Google, because probably half of the answers when we get people calling on the phone, we'll open up Google, we'll do a search, and we'll tell them if they open up Google and switch words to search, they'll take care of it. If you go to APRS:site:ARRL.org, it'll limit it only to the ARRL webpage. In fact, when we first put up the new webpage, one of the major sources of dissatisfaction was the fact that the search engine worked extremely poorly. There was no doubt. It's now Google-based. It's now better connected. In fact, it was 3 weeks ago we discovered that the site was not telling Google when it couldn't find a page. So all of the old pages were still being linked in Google. You'd go there, file not found. It was pretty frustrating. So we've corrected that as well. But you know, a lot of times these sort of online search engines really can be pretty valuable to help you find information. We put a lot of it on our own technology web pages, too. In fact, if you just go to the site and you click on the technology button, you'll see on the left opportunities to access different technical web pages. We have a lot of good things there with links to all sorts of various articles. Station design, introduction, DSP, QRP, just about everything has it there. And it's a combination of some information we've written for the web page and then links to ARRL articles, links to good off-sites. I mean, all good things in amateur radio do not come from Newington, Connecticut. There's a vast reservoir of excellent things going on in the rest of the world. So this will start to answer some of the questions. Now, another common question is, what antenna should I use? Well, I like to point out that antennas or rigs or almost anything else are much like marriage. They all have their strong points. They all have their weak points. It's you who's going to have to make a choice and you who gets to live with the consequences. You're laughing. What, do you have bad consequences there next to you or what? So, yes, if you want to know the best antenna to use, you need the 120-foot tower, and you need to put up these monobander Yagis. There's nothing better. Well, if you can't do that, you may have to make some other compromises. Both the advice we can give on the phone or via email and or the information on the web pages might help you answer that. The other one is, what's the best radio to buy? I mean, that's all people don't want to know about the good point. Just tell me the best radio. So we went to our test engineer, Bob Allison, and said, Bob, we'd like you to tell us, what is your favorite radio of all time? Bob's a vintage collector, so he came up with his favorite radio of all time. There's a lot of different radios out there. Many of them are excellent. And what person will call an excellent radio, the next guy will tell you it just isn't right. It's because of the way things are implemented for one person is not necessarily best for another.
This has been the first of two excerpts from a 2011 Dayton Hamvention Forum talk by Ed Hare, W1RFI, a 25-year employee of the ARRL lab. We'll hear more from Ed next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2011 Rain, all rights reserved. Now, for Rain's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.